And we go to Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Hello. Good afternoon to you there in Ukraine, Joe. I have to tell you, I was on your Twitter feed over the weekend, and I really enjoy what you do there with all the visuals. The song you were talking about Friday and the rabbi you were speaking of, we got to see what you were talking about. And if you follow Joseph on Twitter, you will be able to look at those things. Is it just at Joseph Lindsley? Is that how to get there, Joe?
Hey, Bob. Hello from Kyiv. Yeah, at JP Lindsley on
JP
Twitter.
Lindsley. At JP Lindsley. Thank you.
And you can also go to UkrainianFreedomNews.com, and at the bottom you can find whatever your preferred social media network is. And yeah, there on these other platforms, you know, my team and I, we try to show, you know, the visuals and the videos of life at war. But as I always say, I really appreciate this medium of radio because it forces me, you know, it's easy to take a picture. I mean, it requires a lot of skill that I don't have to take good photos, but to actually describe, you know, what I see and what to go beyond what I see and what people feel here. It's such a privilege to be able to do that with you all every day. And I think of and that, you know, that rabbi, the chief rabbi, Moshe Osman, he's been one of the great characters of the this effort for Ukrainian freedom. And he's got two music videos he made over the past months where he walks around Kyiv, and you really get to see how beautiful the city is and how much he loves this place, you know, as a key Jewish leader here in Ukraine, which really deflates of this, you know, the crazy Russian propaganda. Ukraine is an incredibly tolerant and place where people with traditions feel that they can practice their faith in a way that's respected. And, you know, over the weekend, you know, last Thursday was Independence Day here, and they've kept for holidays the main thoroughfare in Kyiv. It's called Kershatik, and it's this beautiful long avenue. It culminates in the Maidan, where the protests were in 2014, and with very stately buildings on either side. And they close it for holidays for pedestrians. And for the past several days, throughout the entire weekend, they had captured Russian tanks, artillery, and other enemy vehicles that were sort of in a stationary parade all along the middle of Kershatik Street. And it was quite a sight to see. You have Ukrainians walking in their traditional veshivanka, you know, the embroidered linen. You know, normally before the big war on Independence Day, there would be parades, there'd be music. There was no music. It was a weird kind of hush as people were walking, men, women, and children, all different ages, touching these Russian tanks that are, you know, most of them are burned out. These are the very tanks that Moscow thought would be parading, you know, the streets of Kyiv February 2022. And here you see is this reminder of how close the Russians were to taking Kyiv. I was speaking with a friend here in Kyiv last week who said, you know, he was remembering those early hours when, you know, even people who had never picked up a gun were rushing to these sort of distribution points to pick up a firearm. And because they were prepared for guerrilla warfare. And then when you see that, you know, to have this visual of on a peaceful Saturday afternoon, a Sunday afternoon, families walking in their traditional clothes, looking kind of in the silence, the sense of silent appreciation, looking at these burned out Russian tanks, knowing that everyone who was on that street, you know, went through that moment of fear, those first hours of the full scale invasion. And now to be there, you know, there's a little sense of victory there, even though, you know, the fight is still difficult. There's not a little sense. It's a big sense of victory to be on that street these past days. There was, Bob, there was difficult news over the weekend. On Friday, three of Ukraine's top fighter jet pilots were killed in a training accident. One of them, who was really, by all accounts, the Ukraine's sort of top gun, Andriy Juz Pilshikov, he was 29 years old. He had intercepted a significant number of Russian missiles and drones. He was really Ukraine's best asset in the air. He also spoke English very well, and he was a key advocate for Ukraine to get F-16s. He would go to Europe and to the U.S. and make the case for it, and he knew his arguments. He was nicknamed Juice by the American fighter pilots who trained him because he doesn't drink alcohol. So the American Fighter pilots called him Juice, and they had this great rapport. But he was killed in a training accident using a Czech, a training jet made by the Czechs that's been that's used all over the world, along with two other Ukrainian fighter pilots, Vyacheslav Minka and Sergei Prokhazin. And so this, I mean, this is a big loss. And, you know, Juice was so excited about the prospect of actually getting these F-16s here. The kingdoms of Denmark and the Netherlands have promised 61 F-16s. The first of those will be arriving hopefully later this year. And Americans were going to go train in Arizona. They will. It's starting from October. And so it is a major loss. But, you know, some of the propaganda, you can always see, you know, the nasty Russian responses to this. And they said, oh, you know, this shows that Ukraine is not ready for these advanced jets. But, you know, these accidents happen, unfortunately, even, you know, in America.
Sure.
And we had that awful news on Sunday. The American helicopter, the Marines were training on an island off the coast of Australia. And three Marines were killed. Many more were injured when an American-made Osprey helicopter crashed. And this is a reminder. I mean, these, you know, even with the best technology, there still is, you know, these things are dangerous. And so it's no commentary on the intelligence of the Ukrainian fighters. And so certainly Juice, I mean, he there's probably many people in many cities who are still alive because of what he did up in the air so often until his death.
I hate hearing that story, and I'm sure you're right. Juice probably was hoping for the day he could fly those F-16s that are coming. On a brighter note, you know, we talk about how desperate Ukraine is for help, for arms, for equipment, weapons, more soldiers. But we're hearing now that it's highly likely that Russia canceled a major joint strategic military exercise because they have not enough troops and not enough equipment available. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, well, as I always say, skeptical, you know, whatever we hear from Russia. But I think this is what I felt very viscerally walking on that Krasnodar Street in Kyiv the past several days. You know, it's been now two Ukrainian independence days since Russia's big invasion. And Ukraine is not only holding on, but, you know, people are thriving. People are finding ways to live. And I think this is for those in the West who are maybe still nervous about Russia. It's because they focus too much on the headlines. You know, again, as we talked about last week, it was on Ukrainian Independence Day. It was the stories of Prigozhin that dominated the headlines. And that serves psychologically to make people afraid. Oh, be afraid of Putin because he'll kill you in a plane crash. But what it really shows is great division within the Russian leadership. I mean, if anyone were to say that this would happen over a year ago when the Wagner group, Prigozhin's mercenary group, was so essential to Russia's war effort, you know, and that was really the most feared legion of Russians was the Wagner group. And now it's basically collapsed and its leader's dead. And so we can see that, you know, yes, Russia can still cause horrible damage and put people through nights of terror. We had air alarms through the night in much of the country. And it turns out they were false alarms. The Russians were simulated missile launches toward Odessa. They can terrorize people and they can cause a lot of damage, but they're weak. And certainly they're losing. And the worst thing, and the argument from Ukraine is, the worst thing that the world can do is to slow down the support in this moment, because that will give Russia a chance to rebuild. As we see in the counteroffensive, maybe, you know, and the Zeluzhny, the commander in chief, has always said everyone needs to be patient. And it's been many, many months. But if you start to look at the maps now, you can see in the town of Rybotny in Zaporizhia, Ukrainians have taken this town back. They're pushing through the Russian fortifications. And we can maybe begin to see a strategy of very methodical wearing down of the Russian lines. And that's what Ukrainians are doing until the moment arrives when there are fighter jets here. And then I think with that type of support, this could be over quite swiftly, more than we could even imagine.
Wow, wouldn't that be something? And this report about Russia canceling a major military exercise comes from the UK Ministry of Defense, pretty reliable source. Joseph,
yeah, I trust them.
So. Yeah, right, certainly more than the Russians. We'll talk tomorrow, and a reminder on Twitter, if you want to see what we're talking about here, @JPLinsley. And that's LINDSLEY at JP Lindsley. Thanks, Joe. We'll talk tomorrow.
Thank you, Bob. Until tomorrow.